It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
A grand jury has been impaneled in the Russian investigation. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. The Wall Street Journal reported that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has impaneled a grand jury as the investigation into Russian interference in last year's presidential election gears up. Last night, President Trump lashed out at the probe, once again calling it a fabrication pushed by Democrats who lost last year's presidential election. Just the latest in a series of developments that has seen staff shakeups in a Republican Congress that has tied the president's hands as it imposes sanctions against Moscow. Sort all of this out. This morning in our studios, we have Mike Predle. He's a Democratic activist. Sean Bradley, he's with the Republican Club here in Wacomico County. Julie Brewington, she's with the Republican Central Committee here in Wacomico County, although representing herself, as she says. Also, Salisbury University political science professor Michael Laughlin. Welcome to your program.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Good morning.
So I want to start with my Republican colleagues. The phrase that came to me was, particularly for people who supported Donald Trump, it wasn't supposed to be like this. Sean, what's sort of your overreaction, your reactions to how things have developed and where we are right now?
I think if there's something, if there is an act, number one, the American people need to know if there is actual criminal charges being brought against our president. If not, let us know. Because the blanketed statements, well, we're going to investigate the investigate. We've been talking about this 2 or 3 months ago. Yet another investigation probe goes into this. If he's actually under investigation for criminal activity, then let the American people know. Otherwise, it's nothing more than a distraction.
Julie, what about you? What's your sense about it? I'm sure you certainly had high hopes for this president when he was elected, right?
And I still do. Okay. But. Yeah. I feel and I know that there's a group of people that their only mission is to take our sitting president down. And, you know, there's a lot of very serious issues going on in the country, in the world. And we keep hearing Russia, Russia, Russia. Usually there is a crime that's committed and then there is an investigation to determine what went on during that crime. What we're seeing now is an investigation to try to find a crime. So, you know, now they're going to be probing into the man's personal businesses, you know, the Trump pageant that was over in Russia, anything that they could possibly find. And I think it's kind of sad because I don't know that this is good for our country when we are not focused on dealing with the issues that are so very pressing to all of us.
Because to both of you, because this reminds me in some ways the arguments that could have been made in the 1990s. With beginning with Whitewater, we wound up with Monica Lewinsky
with the blue
and
the dress.
And the blue dress. I mean, it's sort of expanded. So, back in the 1990s, let me ask you this: did you feel that way? Either one of you, Sean? Did you
well,
feel
I was
as
too
if
younger
as
remember
this...
the 90s?
Thank you for that. I felt the same way. You know, as far as Bill Clinton, my thoughts were the same. If there is there's actual criminal proof that this man had wrongdoing, go for it. You know, another thing I could also put up is that, you know, we're talking about Trump having, you know, relations with the Russians, but nothing's talked about, at least not on mainstream, is about the uranium being sold to the Russians or Clinton or Bill Clinton's $500,000 speaking engagements to the Russians. Nothing's brought up about that. But these any and all things that Trump has had to do with the Russians is considered there might be criminal activity regarding the destruction or the real election of 2016. I think there's a lot of double standards going on.
And there, you know, there is some question of the prosecutor. Obviously, there is some conflicts of interest there with his relationship with Comey. I mean, there's just, you know, a lot of things going on that are being misdirected or overlooked, in my opinion. You know, you got the issue with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her IT director. You have the unmasking that went on during the Obama administration. I mean, there's so many things. Clinton... I mean, whatever happened with the 30,000 emails that, you know, disappeared and all the tablets and phones that got destroyed with a hammer, it's just to me, you know, there is a concerted effort, and our president is correct in terms of the media. They get on a single mission, and they all kind of tout the same story to divert the American people on what they want them to focus on. There's a lot of things we could be focused on, but it's very interesting the subjects that seem to take hold.
So
I will say one other thing is it would help a lot, and as a Republican, you know, Trump's my president, but at the same time, if he cooperated a little more with the press, maybe this would somewhat lubricate this a little bit and make it a little more expedient.
So, Mike Prettl, I'm sure from a Democratic perspective, you're viewing something differently here.
Well, I would remind my colleagues here that the issue is being kept alive primarily by Donald Trump. I mean, has anybody heard a word from Mr. Mueller since the day he was appointed? No. Trump brings it up constantly with everybody. You know, I mean, there was a whole thing about his son and the meeting with the Russians. And first it didn't happen, and then it happened, but it was over adoption. And then it was, well, it wasn't really over adoption. But so, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But it's not the press that's making it drive. It's the White House. It's Mr. Trump won't stop talking about it. He talked about it to the Russians. He talked about it on CNN, I guess, with Holt. You know, he keeps bringing it up. Now they're trying to smear Mr. Mueller, although I remind you that it was only a few weeks ago that Mr. Mueller was under consideration to replace Mr. Comey as the FBI director. And, you know, did they find out something about him after that? No, they obviously knew all about him before then. And finally, I would say that to the extent that there are investigations, I would remind my colleagues that that all of the committees that are doing the investigation are under the control of the Republicans. So it's not like the Democrats have any power at all to decide what's going to be investigated and what's not. The committee chairs are all Republicans. So the Democrats can't be, I mean, they can talk about it all they want, but nothing substantial is going to be done except done under the investigation that they set in motion. And the Republicans have said that if the president fires Mr. Mueller, which he has talked about doing, or at least it's been suggested that he has that in mind, that they would oppose it and they would reappoint Mueller. So the Republicans are certainly as active as the Democrats in keeping this issue alive.
Because, Michael, one of the things that we sort of heard it last night with the president, who echoed, I think, what some of the things that Julie said about, well, they're investigating. Why aren't they investigating Hillary Clinton, right? There was a whole list of things.
They
did
investigate Hillary Clinton. In July and August, they had a full investigation and found that she hadn't broken any laws.
Can I speak to that for a second? So the thing of it is they did do an investigation. We went back and forth whether or not there was a problem there. And Comey, obviously, at the time, the Democrats couldn't stand James Comey because, you know, supposedly he cost her the election. But the truth of the matter is there wasn't any evidence that supported that she committed a crime. Why was there not any evidence? Because dozens of phones were destroyed with a hammer. There were laptops and other devices that the memory card was taken out of when they were turned over. They couldn't find the evidence because it was destroyed, and nobody really understands what Comey's motives were there, because it was quite, you know, back and forth and grandstanding.
Julie, even assuming that the Fox News stuff is valid, are you suggesting they should revive the investigation that couldn't find any evidence back 9 months ago? Well, I mean, do you want that investigation to start up and to become a new?
Well, I mean, it's a matter. Did she participate in leaking?
You have to answer the question. Should they start that investigation, which didn't have any evidence? You said they didn't have any evidence.
Because maybe it's been destroyed.
Okay, so should they start the investigation without any evidence?
Well, the question is...
The Republicans don't feel it's worth starting that investigation.
Of course not.
The Republicans think it's time to move on.
That's right.
Move on and move forward so we can start building this
country. Trump won't let him move on from the Russian thing because he keeps bringing it up.
And move on is an interesting phrase to
yes,
use.
given
the organization that was created actually during the impeachment of President Clinton. So what do you, Michael, what do you make of all of this in terms of where we are? And particularly, by the way, I want to raise one issue, and that is that the picture or the framework that Trump painted last night was that there are people who are trying to take away this election, okay? And I, even if there's only 25 or 30% of people who ultimately wind up being strong Trump supporters, they are strong, passionate. They've come off a wave. Unlike, for instance, in 1974 with Nixon, where we'd already had some 6 years, people weren't, I don't think, as passionate about Nixon as they are about Trump, which creates this, if for instance, if he were to be forced out of office, that would leave, that would create a real schism, I think, politically in the body politic.
I absolutely agree, and I think that's why we see that the Republican Party and the Republicans in our Congress are in a very difficult place, because on the one hand, there is this base that, that continues to stick with Trump through thick and thin. It would appear clearly, what, 85% still of Republicans support Trump, so that the Republican senators and members of the House are looking down the road a piece and saying, well, that base, I want to get that base. Order for me to stay in power, I need to try to work with this president. On the other hand, I think there is a nonpartisan dimension to this investigation, and that is the question of the rule of law. It's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's the rule of law, that there's great suspicion that laws have been broken. There's great suspicion that, that there has been collusion with the Russian government in interfering with our elections. And I think at this point, you are seeing even Republicans shifting over, right? So that they're now in a position where they're really warning Trump that if he tries to derail this investigation, they're the ones that are going to put it back in place. So I think members of the Republican Party, they have to say, why are our Republican representatives doing this? And I think the reason is that we are in danger of violating the rule of law, that Trump is an authoritarian. He doesn't care about the rule of law. He does not care about the rule of law, and he will do what he can to protect himself and his family members, including getting rid of all the investigators into the questions of violation of law. So I think that is what is on the line at the present time, and we're seeing important members of the Republican Party shifting their position, even if that means that down the road they could face political problems.
Let me ask you this, Mike. How do you compare this with, say, for instance, Watergate, in terms of the composition, in terms of the electorate? Obviously, this is, Watergate took a much, much longer, a couple of years, as a matter of fact, was well into the second term, for instance, of Richard Nixon. How do you compare that and how that administration approached this their scandal, and how this administration is dealing with it, again, without saying whether or not any laws were broken?
Mm-hmm. I think. We see parallels, strong parallels from the president and their staff in their White Houses, attempting to essentially undermine the credibility of the investigation. I mean, the lawyers, Sukalo's out there saying there's nothing here, right? There's no the president isn't being investigated. When we know, right, that he is in fact being investigated, so I think strong parallels. It's moving much faster, it would appear. I mean, the impaneling of the grand jury at this point.
I think it's going to happen quickly.
It's striking.
One of the Watergate prosecutors, Ackerman, was on one of the networks last night talking about. You know, he said he's an expert on obstruction of justice. I'd say his whole career has been devoted to that. He says we have never seen an obstruction of justice case as strong as this. Because usually what we do have to do is prove motivation. He said in this case, the president admitted motivation. He told Lester Holt and he told the Russians both that the reason he fired Comey was because of the Russian investigation. He said that's obstruction of justice. Whether it's an indictable offense or not remains to be worked out by the lawyers. But
and it can be interpreted as an abuse of power, but, yeah, which sets up for...
I would say it's not a scandal, right, until wrongdoing is actually proven.
Well, wrongdoing, I mean, you know, obstruction is proven. The question is whether it's a legal offense or not. And
but
that's what
they're investigating him for, until that's official.
Yeah, I don't even know that, you know, you said that there's no question that he's being investigated personally. I don't know that that's true either.
Well, I mean, that's one of these things. He says that, you know, Comey assured him he wasn't personally under investigation. They're investigating his campaign, you know. There is a question of what he knew and when he knew it and that sort of thing, which is the same thing that some of us lived through with Nixon, you know. And
but I can assure you that the Republican Party, if there is wrongdoing from the president, that we stand fully behind the rule of law.
Well, and hopefully we're in that direction.
That'll
absolutely
be the test.
That's the test,
let me ask you, Sean and Julie, how do you assess how the president has handled this investigation in terms of both? I mean, obviously he's lashed out at the investigation, charged it as partisan, says it's a hoax, and so on and so forth. Is it attacked some of the investigators and so on? Obviously he fired Jim Comey, which seems to be related to. How do you assess how the president has handled this? I'm saying he's got his tweets, right? We see that all the time. How do you assess that?
He needs I think approach his problems as a president and not as a businessman. I'll give an example. It has nothing to do with that. But when I was recently elected as president of the local Republican club, my first two meetings were unorthodox as all get out because I ran it like I did a sales meeting. People were reminding me, well, you have to go by Robert's Rules of Order. You have to do this, 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 and this. And at first I was like, that's ridiculous. I run it how I feel like it. But when you learn it, you know better because there has to be a certain decorum. And I think that's what that problem is. What he's learning now is learning how to be a president. You can't run it like a boardroom because it's not that. It's a totally different world. It's not all what he says or the highway. He's got so many different checks and balances, and I think he's struggling with that hard. Does it mean that he's in the wrong place? No, but he has a long way to go to making sure that he's president and not CEO. And he's still adapting to that role, I think.
Julie, what do you think? How do you assess how he is personally handled? Forget about whether or not there might be fire, there might not be fire. We don't, right?
Right, right.
We're still looking at it. But how he's interacted, as opposed to, although I do recall, by the way, that during the Clinton era, people were not saying nice things about Ken Starr.
Right.
So let's also be very clear about that. But how do you, and is it just simply that we're now in a new era, in the Twitter era, in which, he's...
Well, I will say this. Donald Trump has been Donald Trump since Donald Trump was Donald Trump, there was a time I really did not care for him and his style. I was a Cruz supporter. So I can understand he's bombastic. He's sometimes, over the top. But the fact of the matter is that at least during the election, that was effective for him. Now, we're not in an election anymore. Should he change his approach in some ways? It certainly is arguable that he should. I think, a lot of it is very much red meat for his base that, kind of loves that style and loves that he talks directly to people because there is a huge filter between that office and the rest of us. So it could be argued that he could, smooth out those rough edges, but would he still be Donald Trump? I don't know. So, I really don't know how to answer that because I don't know how you should he become another person? Should he put on a facade? Should he be more polite? I don't know. I mean, obviously there is a tremendous amount of pressure in anybody who holds that position. And there's a lot of moving parts. So, would I do it differently? Certainly I would. But
he needs to listen more to his cabinet, versus a back burner thought. These people are like he said when he admitted that he didn't have all the political experience, but he was going to build a team of absolute consummate professionals, and I will consult with them on a daily basis. And it doesn't seem like he's doing that.
Along those lines. Are you as a Republican? Are you encouraged that General John Kelly, who's now become chief of staff, we did have this sort of a momentary glimpse of Anthony Scaramucci, who kind of came and went very, very fast.
That was crazy.
Priebus is now gone.
Yep.
Spicer's now gone. And there seems to be some reshuffling going on. Do you think that this administration is moving to a different phase? Or is it just, we can move the chairs around the deck, but Donald Trump's still captain?
I can tell you as a sales manager, if I went through a different staff every 2 weeks, my boss would be coming to knock on my door. What's going on?
Well, I think there's a larger picture going on here, and that is, forget the labels of party. There is a problem, and a lot of it is holdovers from bureaucracies, from other administrations, but we have a very serious problem when we have information that is not supposed to be public being leaked from the White House.
Wow, yeah.
And, I don't like all this, moving of all these positions changing. I think it is distracting. I think it's difficult to get any traction in terms of progress of the objectives, but I am more disturbed for our country that there can no longer be any security from another world leader to speak to our president in full confidence. That is a problem, and that needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with quickly. And if that means wiping out everybody and replacing everybody, I'm all for it. But, I mean, you know, the toothpaste is out of the tube at this point.
No, well, let me ask you this, when Connor and Sean, you can respond, is that sure. is you can complain about the leaks, but aren't they true? And the same thing was said during the campaign of WikiLeaks, in which we had all these leaking emails, and one of the Republicans' responses was, well, we know what they didn't get them the right way, mm-hmm. but what they're saying is true. That's the first. And the second is that these are people who work for Trump.
Right?
I mean,
we're talking about two different things here, okay? So when we're talking about WikiLeaks and the exposing of the DNC emails that show that, you know, they basically threw Bernie Sanders under the bus to get Hillary in office and various other, you know, things that came out. We're talking about a party. We're not talking about the presidency of the United States.
Well, doesn't truth matter?
Truth does matter, but we also have security clearances and top security secrets so that we have this is a national security issue.
And every administration, Democrat or Republican, has top secret conversations and memos sent between world leaders to the other. And if you're the president of Brazil and I'm president of the United States and we're talking about here's what we can do, this or that, and she can listen in on it, then are you going to have any confidence in talking to me? You're like, well, you know, Sean, we have to communicate some other way because I'm afraid what I'm going to say is going to be repeated because it may interfere with your infrastructure of your country.
Don, let me respond to that. Ronald Reagan famously said that one man's freedom fighter and one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. You could also say one man's leaker is another man's whistleblower, you know, and that's what these people are. They're whistleblowing. And I would suggest to you that if your boss was either lying to the public or to the board of directors or what have you, and you knew that, you have certainly the right and maybe the responsibility to report that. I mean, the last leak that I'm aware of was last night when they said that the president was encouraging, and they have the transcripts, was encouraging the president of Mexico basically to lie about the wall. You know, and I mean, was that something we need to know? He's been telling the public for a year that...
Okay, here's
Can I finish, Julie? He was telling the public for a year that that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. And the president of Mexico made it very clear to him that he's not. And our president said, well, you have to say that because otherwise I'll get in trouble with my base. And the president of Mexico said, well, if I say that, I'll get in trouble with my base. So basically, our president was trying to, and somebody was aware of that, and they leaked it. And I'm certainly glad they leaked it because now we know what's going on.
If I may, just to interrupt with a nonpartisan perspective, I think transparency in government is good for us, the citizens. The more we know, the more we understand what is happening and whether presidents are lying to us or telling us the truth. And in this case, we see a president who clearly is lying, is a hypocrite. He's telling his base one thing, and then he's saying, well, I want to hide this after all. I got those chumps to vote for me. And I'm not going to follow through with this. I don't really need to. It's really not a big issue for me at all.
No,
So how do you deal with your base?
Okay, I understand the humor on that. Kind of stupid. Yeah. I get it. But what about in times of war? What about, let's say, when dealings with North Korea?
Well, frankly, the Pentagon Papers, before your time, Daniel Ellsberg was one of my personal heroes because he showed us that the Pentagon was lying to the American public for years about what was going on in Vietnam.
There were some things I don't think that the American public should probably hear.
Sure they have heard from Daniel Ellsberg about what was going on in the Pentagon Papers?
Let me explain something here, though, that I think is very important.
Yeah, Julie.
Somebody got a hold of those transcripts. No, it wasn't somebody. It was the National Security Council. Okay.
Okay.
Do you understand the significance of that?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's traceable. Okay. We will find out who did that.
Okay. Somebody probably lose his job over it.
And they should.
But Mike and I are glad that the public knows about it, and you should be too.
Why? Because you think it makes the president look bad?
No, because the president said he was going to convince the public and he was going to continue to lie about who was going to pay for the wall.
I mean, we've had a lot of lies told to us out of that office. Let's talk about Benghazi and a video that caused that, you know?
But would you agree that aren't we better off as citizens if we know the truth rather than live in mystery?
Well, no, what I would say...
What you're suggesting, your line of reasoning is that... these things should be kept from the public.
I think it would depend on the subject matter.
Benghazi's been investigated by 7 different Republican committees, so Benghazi's not a secret.
That's not my point. My point was is they claim that the attack was caused by a video maker.
Okay, well let me pull you back to this administration. Yeah. I think that one of the questions I have is whether or not what has been leaked so far in terms of what's been going on inside the White House, whether that rises to the level of... something divulging some kind of wartime secrets. Mm-hmm. Doesn't strike me we're quite there yet.
I hope
not. You know what I mean?
Well, we don't know now, do we?
Yeah. We go to war with Mexico.
At least for the moment.
We already know about that, apparently.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't say that the discussion over whether or not to build the wall and who's going to pay for it is a national security issue?
I'm not talking about the subject matter. I'm talking about the fact that there is a discussion between two world leaders that is supposed to be classified information. Their conversations are supposed to be so they could speak to each other without...
And I would suggest we should reconsider classification. All too much information is a term
incredible
classified.
Yeah.
This kind of conversation should not be considered classified. We, the citizens, should know what these two leaders are talking about.
What the deal
about.
With Mexico.
What their negotiations are about. The more we know... Better we
maybe
can
we would have known about the uranium being sold to Russia if that was the case. That came out way afterwards.
More we know, the better.
We start off with things like the conversation about the wall, which is it's almost comical that it was caught. But what happens if, because these same leakers have the same technology to leak Pentagon top secret secrets, maybe ones that show a preeminent strike against another country.
And if they leak those things, then they probably will be doing something wrong, and they probably should not do that. And hopefully they will have enough judgment not to do that.
Now, you're speaking of transparency.
Judgment.
Do you feel that those sort of conversations should be made clearly public to the press?
No. Okay. Some of them should, some of them shouldn't.
So,
what I'm saying is that the leaks need to find a way to have those leaks stopped. I just don't know how to do it at this point.
They're never going to be
because
stopped.
They're not going to stop at just a conversation between Mexico and us. They're going to start leaking into our Pentagon and putting American lives in danger.
Let me sort of shift a little because and I'll shift it to you, Mike, because it's the one thing I think, and particularly I think Julie sort of touched on a little bit, is that this president did not come into this federal government particularly liked. For a whole host of reasons, campaign, so on and so forth. I mean, there are people, even traditional career people. I mean, forget about who Obama appointed, who Democrats appointed. That there is an underlying look at this president and they were disturbed clearly by what he said, what they felt he represented. How much of a tug and pull do you think there is between what Trump talks about what he wants, and even what his cabinet says that he wants? I mean, we've had, for instance, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, carrying out a number of policies, some of which I'm sure that some of the career folks would disagree with. I can think of affirmative action, for example. Is there a divide there between sort of this established career folks and all that sort of thing, as opposed to the political folks who come in with a much different agenda?
I think most definitely. I mean, here's where the term, I guess, has dark notions, but the whole notion of the dark state or
the deep state.
And I think there is certainly truth to that. I mean, the federal government has grown over the years and has developed what's called the Senior Executive Service, which is essentially a whole set of professional bureaucrats, professional experts in a variety of fields. Who are very important in terms of policy making and making the government work well. In my view, I think they do a really good job and that the government is necessary and they are essential to the efficiency and effectiveness of the federal government. They also are committed to making the government work well and making the government be effective. And I think what we have with Donald Trump and his whole set of folks he's brought in are government wreckers. they really do. They don't. They look at the government and they don't think we should have this kind of structure. And hence the very strong the radical kinds of cuts in the budget that the president is proposing across the board, particularly in places like the Environmental Protection Agency and the like. And so clearly there is a tussle. I think a major tussle going on between this part of the formal government structure and this president and his appointees, his political appointees.
Let me stay with Mike for just a moment. So, compare the Trump agenda and how he's dealing with traditional policy, both domestically and foreign policy, as opposed to say George W. Bush. I mean, do you get a sense that the traditional folks in the federal government were pushing back against George W., even though we had obviously an unpopular war, but as opposed to this president? I mean, there seems to be something unique about what's happening here.
I think that's true. Bush was in a same kind of ideological frame of mind, that is, less government is better government, but I don't think had the same kind of radical perspective. I mean, it's fascinating. In the one sense, the radical in the House of Representatives is Paul Ryan, right? And he and Trump actually have similar kinds of perspective, I think, on trying to really roll back the New Deal, roll back the Great Society programs, and roll back the whole role of government. Whereas I think that Bush, George W., was more of an establishment Republican in that respect, with some exceptions, I think. But
I agree.
There's also some other differences. Number one, the Clintons were not that far to the left. I mean, the Clintons were more moderate than they had a broader perspective, perhaps. And the second thing is George Bush came in and immediately with his vice president, who was a master at manipulating the administration, you know. So, I mean, Trump is coming in without anybody in a Cheney role.
Sophisticated role.
You know, as you know, I work a lot with environmental issues, and, you know, and Cheney came in, and what he was most concerned about is energy policy, and he created this whole new infrastructure for energy. That was his big deal. Yeah. And that was the major way that they tried to change the government, because we elected two oil men, basically, to run the government, okay? On the other hand, Trump doesn't have that, you know, and I'm hearing a lot. I read a lot of the environmental literature, you know, and a lot of the major people in the EPA have resigned. You know, some of them have written letters explaining why. I mean, these are people, thousands of people who have spent their whole life trying to do good science and justify decisions with respect to protection of the environment, and then they're being told that we're reversing course on some of these things, and it would be amazing if they did not balk at some of that and fight back, push back to the extent that they could without losing their jobs.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head as to what is really going on. I mean, from my perspective, you know, there is a very large bureaucracy. I'm of the small government mind. Let people, you know, I'm from the government. I'm here to help. You know, let people, you know, get out of the way and let entrepreneurs do their talents. But we have a very large bureaucracy in this country, and it's immobilizing things. But aside from that, people are self-preservationists. They're egocentric. And so when someone like Trump comes in and threatens their very existence, there is going to be pushback. And I think what we're seeing from the leaks, from all the, you know, anti-Trump from internally is a pushback, because they're self-preservationists. That's what my belief is. And if it wasn't that way, we probably would see a different horizon. You know, there would be probably more cooperation, but there isn't. There is a big butting of heads, and it's from all sides. It's not a Democrat versus Republican thing.
But they believe in the mission, and that's a big difference. It seems.
Well, we don't know if they believe in the mission. We know they have a job, and they'd like to keep their job. That's probably... more
policy
accurate.
Versus economic. Oh well, I don't know. I would have to think about that. But let me move on to something else, and that is that one of the things that struck me over the last 6 months, particularly last month, and with the transcripts that were revealed about the conversations with the Mexican president and the prime minister of Australia, the fact that the Congress had decided to push through these sanctions and tie the president's hands. And now, of course, the Senate is going to be in continuous session because they don't want him to fire Jeff Sessions, even though General Kelly, the chief of staff, said that Sessions' position is secure. there seems to be a certain weakness to this president, in contrast to certainly during the campaign to what we saw. This idea that he was going to come in and he was going to get things done, healthcare was going to be simple, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That, and one of the things that really struck me was over the sanctions bill, the Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, and he says, and in one of his tweets, he says, the Trump administration has demonstrated total impotence handing over executive functions to Congress in the most humiliating way, as almost as if he's tweaking, you know, the president. It seems to me that we're looking at a president who's not as strong as that public image. Sean?
Trump is only as powerful or as strong as his Republican Senate and representatives. If he continues to go around them and try to tell them what they're going to do, almost like a monarch, it's not going to work. He's got to work and compromise with his own party. Without the support of the Republican Party, oh, God forbid, work with the Democrats as well. You know, he's a leader of the United States of America, not the leader of the Republican Party. Without working with all parties involved, or instead of firing somebody by a tweet, that is totally off the cuff. You don't do that. Unless he's willing to compromise and work with the people that he's appointed, and even the Democrat side of it, the Democrats aren't going to work with him. They're going to continue to bash him. And his own party is going to start to revolt. He's got to learn to run the country, not his agenda. And that's where we're running into these constant issues you're hearing on the news, the subject of this show. We're not going to move ahead and do the things he wants to do until he starts working as a team and not as himself and with yes men.
Julie, what do you think?
Well, I think it's funny because, you know, the Republicans in Congress and Senate all ran, every single one of them, on repeal and replace. And they can't seem to get this health bill done. And that's not the president's fault, you know. Working with Democrats because he's more cooperative, I mean, you got to be out of your – I mean, they hate the man. It's just not going to happen. So I think
you
that –
you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, I think that he you know, is understanding, as we all understand, this is a great big ship. And to turn it, it takes a lot of moving parts and a lot of people. And I agree with Sean to some degree that, you know, he needs to learn how to work with people a little bit more. He's used to being, you know, the guy that says you're fired and being in control. And there's a lot more he's learning. There's a lot more moving parts and a lot of people who don't want to see him succeed, which is troublesome. And again, I go back to how does Donald Trump not be Donald Trump? I don't know. But here we are in this place where there seems to be, you know, no cooperation from any quarters. I don't think that Donald Trump is necessarily an ideologue. I don't necessarily see him as a conservative. But there is a lot of self-interest in D.C., in Washington, and we see a lot of people just protecting themselves, their seats, their jobs, and as I said before about the bureaucracy, you know, a lot of people just, I think, not looking out for the best interest of the country.
Julie, just quickly, what do you see him as politically?
You say
you don't see him as a conservative. What do you see him as? How would you put him on that political scale?
I don't know. I wouldn't say he's a centrist. I wouldn't say he's hard right by any means. Yeah. I certainly wouldn't say he's a leftist. You know, Trump is a unique individual. He's, you know, what was it, Mr. Smith goes to Washington? I mean, that's kind of him.
Trump is Trump.
So he's unique, and I think that's why he does get people so very excited. And, you know, he has such a strong loyalty from his base because he is just like, I'm going to go in there and drain the swamp. And, you know, and he's trying, but, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, I think. Mike's shaking his head no.
We all want him to succeed. I mean,
do we?
We're not a good country unless we have an effective president.
his success is not the policies that you would follow.
Well, but
let's also be clear about that. Nothing would please me
more than to drain the swamp. But he has not done that. He's filled the swamp with alligators, billionaires, people who have vested
interests. But
on
climate change, for example, you don't want him to succeed in climate change, for example, running
the State Department and selling coal to every country that they can establish. You know, No, I mean, we all wanted to succeed. Look, the Democrats have reached out. I mean, Schumer is a consummate deal maker. You know, Schumer has approached him constantly with, let's sit down and talk about this. Matter of fact, Lamar Alexander now has said, we're going to go behind the president and we're going to go behind the leadership of the Senate and we're going to put together a group to try to create a viable health care program to improve Obamacare. And the Democrats say, wonderful, that's what we've been waiting for all these, ever since Trump came along. But, I mean, nobody wants him to fail, but we do want to block some of the things he wants to do. We want to block a lot of the things he wants to do.
Let's talk about for a second. I want to ask, you know, why do we think he got elected? And that was because we'd had, in my view, it's just my opinion, economic flatline for so long. You know, 1.5% of growth for the last 8 years. And we are seeing some things change. There is some industry coming back. He is doing some things that, you know, I think is good for our country. We were talking about the unemployment rates before we started on air. I mean, you know, they have gone down. They're, you know, and I think that's really what it comes down to is the voter, the average person wants to do well. You know, they don't really care a whole lot about this special counsel or Russia or whatever. I think people are concerned about North Korea. I think they're concerned about their pocketbooks. And, you know, about their enjoying their lives.
But, Julie, their pocketbooks haven't improved at all. It's all going to the people at the top.
Well, there haven't been any policy changes, but no real serious policy change yet. That's true. But go ahead, Michael.
I would have to disagree that I think I don't want this president to succeed because this president is a transactional president, has no moral basis, there are no moorings. He's as happy with, it didn't matter what health care bill was being passed. He couldn't care less. He didn't know anything about it. Couldn't care less. He just wants a win. He has undermined the credibility of the presidency. He has undermined the character of our politics. Here's a president that is mean-spirited. He has ugly, his language undermines the whole question of what kind of civil discourse we have for this country. For this president to succeed will damage on down the line the question of our politics. Our politics is at issue here. Well, for you to say that you want you don't have any problem with Donald Trump is to say you have no problem with the kind of civil discourse that he has engaged in. I mean, this is not marginal stuff. This is important character of our the nature of our democratic politics.
Well, that's not what I said.
I think that was the implication of that.
No.
Let me say one other thing about the question of these institutions. I think part of what we are seeing here is that the presidency, I mean, the presidency is an independent institution. And the problem is this president doesn't know how to run a presidency. The chaos within his staff, the chaos within the White House. What is happening now is that even Republicans in the House and Senate now are looking upon this as, this president is not credible. This president cannot be trusted. So to have, I mean, it's striking to have a Republican Congress, right, basically passing a sanctions law saying, we don't care. We're gonna pass it. You don't have any control of this
anymore. Tie his hands.
It's a question. I mean, this is what's fascinating about this is from time immemorial, really, the president has wide latitude in the control of foreign policy. The Congress now has said no more. Right, we're gonna take that away from you. We're gonna take with regard to the special counsel, we're gonna take that away from you as well. Which tells us that, I mean, and again, it's striking. This is not the other party. This is the same party. Congress is now taking up and saying we're gonna stand up to this president because we no longer trust this president. This president is a chaotic president. How long this president will last is now in question.
Well, that goes back down to checks and balances. That's what they're there for. And I've never heard of any president that wasn't somewhat mean spirited to get to the top of the chain like they are. You also have to consider what has he done. As far as now, you may disagree, but opening up, making coal a commodity again, reducing our dependency on foreign energy. You know, he's not a nice guy.
Remember the Obama McCain race. Mm-hmm. When McCain was taking questions from the audience after he spoke, and a woman came up and said, "Oh, Obama's really this bad.
He's a Muslim.
He's a Muslim and bad man." What did McCain respond?
He said, "No, ma'am, that's not correct.
He's a good man." He says, "He's a good man. I disagree on policies." Right? Mm-hmm. That, I think, is the kind of discourse we should be striving for.
Yeah, but John McCain lost, you know?
So in other words, it doesn't matter. If we have multiple Donald Trumps, we should change our discourse.
Character assassination should be the main.
If we can win by character assassination, that's the goal.
Julie, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you mentioned morals. I'm not sure exactly what is the source of the morals that you're talking about.
His civil discourse with regard to women.
Yeah, but what is the baseline? I mean, where are we getting the morals from?
I mean, look at the employees he has in his
I mean,
company.
I don't see it that way. I can understand what you're saying. I can actually empathize and agree with you on some of it. There was a time I could not stand Donald Trump because of his attacks on Ted Cruz. But
has he changed?
No, he hasn't.
Oh.
My understanding has changed. And the reason my understanding changed is because I understand who he is. I believe that he cares very much about our country. Look, 8 years of Barack Obama, I didn't care for the guy. I didn't like his policies. He wasn't, to me, morals. You talk about morals. I felt he was vapid of morals. So I think it's a perspective when you're placing that judgment. Like I said, I can understand what you're saying because some of the things he said has been off the top. But do I think he hates women? No, I don't believe he hates women. I think he's a huge supporter of women. If you look at his companies, that's who he's promoted. What I think is happening, though, which is more important to me, is probably maybe what you felt during the Obama administration, is that there is a force, and it is not party driven. It is people that, you know, really do want to see him fail for a number of reasons. Do they dislike him personally? Maybe some of them do. Do they dislike his policy? Maybe some of them do. But it's problematic, I think, probably like you felt about Barack Obama, then we are such a divided nation. It's very troublesome to me. And I'm glad we can sit here and have a conversation and, you know, be kind to one another because kindness is important. Does he sometimes do things that make you go, oh, my God, why did he say that?
Does he help us to heal those divisions?
Well, you know, I don't know. But the question is really, are we going to succeed as a nation in terms of our world position, people's pocketbooks, people's children, and where we're going? To me, the last administration made it very, very difficult for people to succeed. I think that is most important, that people are economically able to do well. It does well for better for our communities. It impacts crime levels. It, you know, obviously allows people more freedom to enjoy their lives if they have economic growth. I think that's why he was elected. And I think that the energy focused on trying to constantly take him out, you know, really, you know, bothers me because it's not productive for me personally or you.
Let me, this, by the way, just let me interject. Kellyanne Conway, president's counselor, she said, "So many of them, being voters, look at this administration as a rescue mission years in the making. It's not just about policy, but respect. It's just they haven't felt respected." I'll tell you, to you, Michael O'Loughlin.
I certainly agree with that, actually, because I think that, while I think the Obama administration did yeoman's work in getting us out of a deep recession, and that the unemployment rate did go down, so a lot of people did get employed, they did get new jobs and so on. Still, the inequality of income and wealth, I mean, wages remain stagnant. A lot of people who voted for Trump did not benefit, did not get better. They didn't, their positions, their economic and financial positions particularly, did not improve substantially.
He's been in office 6 months, though.
No, I'm talking about under Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So that even though you have the unemployment rate go down, the wages stay stagnant. So even though productivity might have gone up, it usually the wages track with productivity. So if you're working harder and things, then you get better, you get higher wages. That was not happening. And I think the response here is that the Democrats are not helping us. Obama didn't help us sufficiently. And we're going to take a gamble on this crazy, this crazy businessman who seems to have the veneer of making the big deal, right? Because that was a big promise. I mean, even my in-laws, right, my relatives would say, I voted this guy because I think he's a great businessman and we need a businessman now.
But Thanksgiving is fun at your house, isn't it?
In office, right? And I think that was, so I think that's still, and I think that's one of the reasons why they continue to support Trump, even in the face of this storm.
I truly believe he is what he is. He's going to bring back businesses. He's going to hopefully cut taxes on corporate America. So that's it forces, what's the point of me? He has a carpet business. Me driving his tax rate up to 80%, he's going to take his operation to China. Why don't I give him a break, drop it to 60% so he stays in Maryland and actually, God forbid, bring jobs and hire people. That's where you get your taxes from. You don't get it from sending businesses out of the country. And I think that's one of the things that attracted Trump voters. That's what attracted me.
There's no question. There's no question that he is an effective salesman for that point of view. But, there's no question that Obama did not make the case for what the Democrats were trying to do. I would maintain that if you looked at the policies that they tried to advance, job training and equality between the sexes and economic equality and that sort of thing, they were all things that were being pushed by the Democrats and were being blocked by the Republicans. But Trump came along and he has convinced people, partly because I don't think that Hillary Clinton was a very effective spokesman for the Democratic position. He convinced people that he knew how to change things and knew how to improve their lot. And frankly, I think it was completely selling them a bill of goods. I think you guys have been snookered by P.T. Barnum, came in and said, I'm going to drain the swamp. Okay, so what has he done? He has put a bunch of incredibly wealthy people who have a history of discrimination, a history of not draining the swamp at all, a history of serving themselves and building empires for themselves. And, he has not brought jobs back. He is not going to revive the coal industry because coal it wasn't destroyed by over-regulation. It was destroyed by the fact that it's no longer economically feasible.
Now, I keep hearing the term discrimination. I would challenge you to look at Donald Trump's business holdings and his employee rosters, and you'll find that it's actually quite diverse. And that's the one thing I keep hearing racism or discrimination. Look at the records.
Okay, I haven't accused him of discriminating racially, although he has not. I mean,
there were some instances early in his career.
Yeah, early in his career. Yeah, he was. Matter of fact, he was fined for unfair housing. But that's in the past. And I mean, there's no question that he has favored women, but they're all attractive women, and they're all from a, I hate to say, a sexual standpoint, but
I think Julie can speak this great, being the woman on this panel, but there does seem to be a distinct difference between the professional women he hires, right? Which, as a matter of fact, somebody's joked the other day, it's the women who are now surviving the White House, not the men.
That's right.
On the other hand, his view of women in a sexual way, which we've heard all the comments, including obviously the tape. There seems to be a sharp divide between this, where he's got women working for him, and yet there's another thing, another view. I mean, and Julie, could you speak to that? I mean, it just seems to be two Donald Trumps sometimes. Or maybe you don't agree with that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, how do I say this?
Go ahead.
Trying to think.
Go ahead.
I mean, I've been around men all my life. Let's just put it that way.
Waste of time.
does it bother me that he thought out loud what I've heard many men say? Not really. Hmm. You know, what really matters to me is there real respect there? I mean, we would not have a huge pornographic industry worth billions of dollars if Donald Trump was different than every other man. let's face
I don't know whether that's an endorsement.
It's just to me.
It's a family-friendly show.
It's just another way to, you know, go after him, in my view.
But he expressed a predatory.
That's not what he said. That's not how I took it as a woman.
So
he didn't say
a man
no,
that says that.
Shall we say it, Don? He didn't say attacking. He said
grabbing.
He said they let
them. And
you
don't interpret that as sexual assault.
No. Because he didn't say they didn't let him. He said they let him. See, there's a difference between letting and not letting.
Let's go to that.
But anyway, he certainly had an impression. I don't know. Anyway, I want to move to the last few minutes we got here.
Careful now.
Okay. Public opinion polls. It seems pretty safe here. The Quinnipiac University, 30% approval rating of the president overall in terms of voters, 61% disapproval. Some other numbers, 54 to 26, embarrassed by the president. One significant number was non-college white voters, 43% approve, 50% disapprove. Another number, 60% to 37% believe that the president believes he supersedes law. There were, however, some unfavorables. 58% to 39%, the president was viewed as being strong. And 55% to 42%, the president being intelligent. So Sean, I'm going to ask you, so what are you to make of those numbers? Start with the overall number. I mean, obviously, he's got nowhere to go but up. I mean, what do you think is the significance of those numbers, not only for his presidency, but for 2018? We're still a long ways away.
But it is a long ways away. And I think in order to win, increase these numbers, he's got to not only focus on the business end of America, but also the social end as well, to show that he's actually for not just commerce, but also the American person. Now, he's helping with job, like, for example, the coal industry. You guys heard the town hall speech last night, or whatever it was. But he's also got to work on the social end of it, too. There's a lot of need in America. If he's going to pick these things up, a lot of people are feeling alienated because they don't necessarily think that he's for them. He's only for business and getting us ahead and you know, financially. And that's great. We need to have an economically strong country, but we also need to have one that's socially strong as well, and that is divided, which I found, and you may disagree, but really started off in by the beginning or end of Bush's tenure as well as Obama's. There's been a divide in this country, us against them, them against us, and he really needs to work on that. And that's maybe where you go across party lines and work with everybody concerned versus fighting everybody.
What kind of impact do you think this could have if this trend continues, which is one of the fears I know the Republicans on Capitol Hill have? This trend continues. Do you think that this could be a real down year in 2018 then for the Republicans, or are the technicals so stacked against Democrats really gaining much that?
I don't think anything's stacked against the Democrats. I think again we need to start working as Americans, not as partisan warfare. This is not a civil war.
Julie, what do you think? I mean, you're in the Republican Central Committee, and I don't expect any great Democratic wave here on the shore. But what do you think?
We were talking about making predictions early on, how dangerous that was, right? Yeah. I'm not a good one to ask about the polls. Called me a little bit skeptical, but the last time we had polls that were any significance was the last election, and they were wrong. Do I think that there's going to be? This is going to be a very interesting election cycle. We've seen some special elections across the country where they went to Republicans. We've also seen some smaller legislative offices now going to Democrats. The Democrat Party is very energized, I would say. You know, they are upset, angry, some of them a little radically crazy in my view. But, you know, there is, as in sales, to get to a certain percentage, you know, it takes a lot of effort. But to increase or double that takes so much more. We're at a point of approaching saturation in terms of our party offices. Now, can we grow it more? Probably. But we're going to be at a challenge. For example, here in Maryland, we have a Republican governor. We have a Republican delegation, a Republican council. in the county. You know, there's not a lot of room to grow it. So this is going to be, you know, as a party, I think a challenging election for us.
Well, we've been speaking with Mike Predla. He's with the He's a Democratic activist. Also, Sean Bradley, he's with the Republican Club. Julie Brewington, she's with the Republican Central Committee here in Wicomico, although she says, as she says, she speaks for herself. Also, Salisbury University political science professor Michael Laughlin. I appreciate all of you chatting. We'll have you all back in a few months, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit pac14.org.